Hello and welcome to the Scottish Housing News podcast. I'm Kieran Finlay, the editor of Scottish Housing News. With me in the studio, as always, is my co-host, Jimmy Black. In our last episode, Jimmy and I spoke to Pedro Cameron and Gareth Young about equality, diversity and inclusion, or EDI for short, and specifically how it relates to the gap in evidence that exists for many people presenting as homeless and the housing options that need to be available to people with protected characteristics. Today, we're going to continue with EDI, but from a slightly different angle. We're talking about housing associations, membership bodies and other organisations within the sector. Should they be looking to increase diversity among staff, leadership and at board level? Why is that important? And what resources are available for those looking to attract a wider range of backgrounds and experiences?
To answer this and a lot more, we've assembled a great panel via Zoom, including Lara Oyedeli, the current president of the Chartered Institute of Housing. Lara sits on the board of Care Specialist Housing 21 and chairs Bradford-supported housing charity Hope Housing. Her CIH presidential campaign, In My Shoes, seeks to raise awareness of the importance of racial diversity within the leadership of the housing sector. We have Callum Chomchuk, the National Director for CIH Scotland and Chair of the internal EDI group, which for the past 2 years has been working to improve EDI throughout CIH and its membership. And we'll also hear from Fash Fazoro. He is the CEO of social enterprise Datakirk. Fash helped organise the recent Scottish Black Talent Summit and can offer insight on how to improve diversity and inclusion in the workplace. So Lara, your campaign In My Shoes, tell us about that. Tell us how it's going.
Well, I've been president now for just over 2 months and I've spent a lot of that time talking to people, like I am again today. The campaign is based on my observations of my experience in social housing. This is as a recipient of social housing, as someone that was homeless. First of all, I grew up in a council house. I didn't know it was a council house at the time. It was just a house. I later found out, realized it was council housing. And then as a late teenager, I became homeless and I was given a council flat for which I was very grateful. And because of that council flat, I was able to go back to school, finish my A-levels, go to uni, and then subsequently decide that I actually wanted a career in housing so that I would be in a position to give someone else a set of keys, like someone had given me a set of keys a few years prior. I wanted to be able to give that joy and security to other human beings. So I then pursued a career in the sector, which culminated, that's the word, culminated in being a CEO of a housing association in 2006. And I left that role in 2013 or 14, I think it was. Now, in between all of that, obviously I rose through the ranks. I started as a housing assistant, housing officer, team leader, rent manager, housing services manager, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what I noticed is that the higher I got in the organizations, the less people looked like me. But there were plenty of people that looked like me when I was a housing officer and a housing assistant and, you know, doing the frontline roles. So I started to query that recently to say, why is it in the sector that people like me don't tend to rise to the top? What is the problem? Is it us? Are we undereducated? Do we not have the right experience? Or, you know, we're not applying for the right jobs? Or is it that the system doesn't allow us to progress? I still don't know what the definitive answer is. It's one of those two or a combination of. So what I wanted to do with my campaign was to reflect my experience in the sector. So even though the difficult part of the campaign is focusing on diversity in the boardroom, and I'm focusing specifically on racial and ethnic diversity in the boardroom, because it would be a nightmare to try and do all 9 protected characteristics in 1 year. I'm also looking to have a campaign that's very inclusive with the reference to shoes, because I think everybody most people and everybody in the sector has at least one spare pair of shoes that they're not wearing anymore. And the idea was that if you can't afford to donate, because most of us are struggling to pay our bills these days, you can at least donate a pair of shoes to my chosen charity, which is ShoeAid. And what ShoeAid do is they give shoes to homeless families and families in need who are lacking in footwear. And you will appreciate that if you're struggling to pay your bills or struggling to pay to buy food or pay your electricity bills, the last thing you can spend money on is a decent pair of shoes, and everybody needs good shoes. So the term In My Shoes is trying to encapsulate my entire experience within social housing. So as a homeless person who wasn't able to obsess with shoes, someone who likes to give back, and also have an inclusive campaign where everybody can be part of the charitable campaign, and then culminating right now with my position in a couple of boardrooms where I remain the only Black person in that room. And I'm asking through my campaign, is your board or is your leadership team representative of the communities that you work in? Is it representative of your staff, and is it representative of your tenants?
Lara, it might be good for us to tell people at this point that you have a crowdfunder going for your In My Shoes campaign for the ShoeAid charity. You've still got a bit to go to hit your target. We can maybe put a link on our website to help people find it. And it chimed with me because in Dundee long ago, in fact all over Scotland, there were charities called Bootless Bairns, and they were charities that helped people get shoes. And we're talking here about 1900, 1905. So it's sad to hear that we've had to go back to that and look for shoes for people to put in their feet. Have you been able to come to any kind of conclusion about what is keeping people like you out of the boardroom and out of the senior ranks of housing associations?
I've come up with some suggestions as to why I think it's a problem. There's various ideas. So I'll see if I can remember them in a logical manner. So the first one I'm thinking of is, this is like the chicken and egg situation. So I've done this myself, and I don't know if Fash has. If you want to join an organization, the first thing you go and do is look at the website. And if you look at the website and you see a whole reams and reams of white male faces, I ask myself, well, I want to go work with these people. It's that simple. So that's one of the very first things that happens. You look at a website. If that website doesn't reflect you, if you feel I may not be comfortable in that organization, there's no one there that looks like me, they obviously don't want someone like me there, so I'm not going to apply. Okay, so that's one. And I say that from experience, even though I have applied, but I do ask myself that question, and everyone does. And what that also does, especially in the universe that we live in now, it deters the younger generation from applying to these organizations, because they want to work in a place they feel comfortable, in a place that think is equitable and diverse. And that is expected now. So what you portray on your website has an impact on who applies to work in your organization, who applies to be on your board. And you can only portray the reality of your boardroom. So there you go. So that's one. A second one, which is slightly more sophisticated, is what I haven't said in the introduction, is one of these I run is called Black on Board. What Black on Board does is coach Black and brown people to become board members. There are many of us who are skilled in our various professions and have lots of experience, but may never have thought of becoming a board member. Or in my case, if you'd have mentioned a board member to me 20 years ago, I would have said to you, well, I'm not an old white man. Because I thought that board members were just old white men, because that's what I ever saw. But now I know better. So what I find with the candidates that I'm working with is they will not register with the big four recruitment agencies that housing associations in England specifically use. Now, you will know, some of you probably know who they are. They have double barrel names, and they have high class clients, and they advertise all the main senior roles. And they will say, we're looking for diverse candidates. But guess what? The diverse candidates that I'm working with won't register with those agencies, because they look at the websites and then look at the people they've placed and think, well, they don't want me, they're not looking for me, I'll never get shortlisted, so they don't bother to register. So there's a big gap there in where organizations go to look for candidates and where candidates are. So that's just two that I could give you at the moment. There's another one that is more to do with human HR psychology, which talks about people generally recruiting and hiring in their own image. And that's actually a lot more complicated to resolve. And there's lots of things to look at in terms of things like, I actually don't like the phrase unconscious bias. I think it's conscious bias. There's nothing unconscious about it. And being very, conscious about having a diverse room full of people and a diverse shortlist, and actually insisting that the shortlist is diverse and not letting recruitment agencies get away with you couldn't find any candidates. So I think I've given you three there for now.
Three very worthwhile points there, Lara, thank you. Callum, I just would like you to reflect on what Lara was saying there, what the importance of her campaign, the importance of having visible examples to for young people, and how that maybe relates to what CIH are trying to do with their mentoring programme as well.
Yeah, thanks, Kieran. I mean, I suppose I'll just start by saying, I think, if anything, Lara maybe underplayed sort of the scale of the problem by talking about those representation at maybe more junior levels within organisations, and it thins out at the top. I think if we are honest and we look across the leisure sector in Scotland, we don't see a lot of diversity when it comes to race in Scotland. I think there's a long way to go. I think Lara's aim is absolutely right. We want to see leadership. We want to see more diversity in leadership across the sector. But I think we also want to see that at all levels within the sector, because that's, you know, whether it's the kind of the tenant-facing roles or whether it's the strategic planners, actually, we want a profession that's more representative. And that's, you know, and Lara's right, it's chicken and egg. How do you get that? You need to be it in order to then create a template. And I think the sector, unfortunately, over a considerable amount of time, hasn't shown the leadership that's needed to be required. I think we are, for the most part, social organisations with a social purpose who are trying to do a social good. And that is incredibly well-meaning, it's important work, and we make a huge impact tenants and communities all across the country. But sometimes that social purpose allows us to hide from our own failings. And one of the big failings, you know, we focus so much on the big picture, we forget to see this sometimes the people in the communities that we're not representing as well. And that requires honesty, it requires self-reflection, it requires having a hard conversation about what we need to do in assessing ourselves. And I think we are in a much better place than we have been recently, but there's still a lot of place to go. I mean, the role CIH is playing here, we're trying to show some leadership, but that, you know, we're one organisation in the ecosystem, but we're trying to show one element of leadership by launching this EDI census so we can capture a picture of what the workforce looks like across the UK. We've launched an EDI framework, which is an element of resources and support. Other organisations are doing the same, and the hope is collectively we can start to change things. But it's a challenging landscape here, and I think we're going to take a long time to reach Lara's ambition. You know, Lara's only president for a year, so let's see where we are in a year. But hopefully, it's the start of a kind of a longer term transformation sector that we see more people attracted to joining the boards. We see more people encouraged to join the housing profession because they see it as a diverse, representative, values-based profession that we want it to be.
It sounds like you're trying to create this holistic picture of who works in the sector. Is that what you're trying to do with the EDI CIH census?
Yeah, Kieran, absolutely. That's the perfect pitch for a plug for me, so thank you. If you're a CIH member, please, please complete the EDI census, because that's what we want. We want, and we recognise people's data is important and data is personal, and we ask personal questions. But the reason we're doing that is we're trying to understand, it's all anonymised, nothing will be identifiable to an individual. We're trying to create as complete a picture we can of the housing profession across all tenures, you know, private and housing associations, local authority, everybody who's working in the housing sector, because only by understanding the diversity or the lack of diversity that we can actually start to understand what do professionals, CIH's point, we here to support housing professionals, we need to know what our membership looks like. We need to lead them, challenge them and support them the services that they can provide for tenants. But at the heart of that is for them to trust us with their data. And if we can aggregate that, we can provide a better service to them. And in turn, they can provide that kind of that local and national leadership to provide brilliant services, but also bring in the kind of talent that we all desperately need to see come into the sector.
So we need the data, and we have a data expert on the panel. But Fash was also a housing officer at West Granton Housing Cooperative. So Fash, tell us about your experiences in that role in housing and in Scotland.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think Lara summed it up for people of my colour working in the housing sector in 2005, privileged to work for West Granton Housing Association, and with the level of qualification and experience that I had, I couldn't progress, I stalled. And that made me to take a good decision of leaving the sector. So I started Home Pointer in the process, and now I have DataCog. Many of my colour wants to work in the housing sector, but the challenge, as Lara mentioned, the systemic racism within the sector needs to be addressed. You know, we tend to learn from community members. We tend to support one another, and in terms of coaching, in terms of seeking advice about what next needs to be done, that we use the word of mouth a lot. So the impression we had about the social housing in general is you enter into it, you start your career, you won't be able to progress. It's a fact. And we have a lot of Black Africans in Scotland, I don't know much about England, in Scotland, that have been working in the sector for over 20 years and they cannot progress to either manager or chief executive. So a lot needs to be done. The data are there. I check Scottish Housing Regulator between 2014 to 2019 have statistics about representation within the housing, but I don't understand why from 2020 to 2022 that data is no longer being collected. Is it because of Joy Flood? I don't know, but the data are there that we have underrepresentation of Black. For my organization, DataCo, it was set up primarily to support Black African, because what we do with Bini people, you know, also cause a lot of issues in terms of culture. You know, we have our own identity, we have our own peculiar issues, and we're a highly skilled community. When I say highly skilled, is we're full of people with 2, 3, 4 master's degree, but are already de-skilled. And we are working hard to upskill, to support organizations that may want to partner with us and increase the representation in key good sector of the economy here in Scotland. Thank you.
Fash, can I ask you, you recently organised the Scottish Black Talent Summit. Was the reaction from employers to that interesting? Did you open people's eyes to the possibility of employing more Black African people?
Thank you very much. On the 31st of October, we had the first Scottish Black Talent Summit, and the Scottish economy was challenged because we were considered as hard to reach, difficult to find. And they were surprised. The event was on Monday. The 80% of the participants there were Black Africans. So they are looking for opportunity, and we demonstrated that we have what we call transferable skills to support any sector of the economy of Scotland. But many businesses are complaining they can't find labor or skills, but we are saying we can't find the jobs. Something needs to be done, and that is why we set up. Many businesses were challenged. We have this chief statistician of the Scottish government was really, really impressed by the abundance of talent at the summit. So we want to do the same thing for social housing, to say we are here. We are starting the career accelerator soon, and we want CIA to be part of the housing association to harvest, to tap into this untapped talent. Yeah, that's a nice phase for us. Thank you.
So, Callum, are you getting that message that the talent is out there? Are you getting that across to the managers and the recruiting, the people who recruit for housing associations in Scotland?
So I think there is a big challenge around how this housing sector recruits and markets itself more broadly. Before we get into the issue about kind of black talent in particular, I think as a profession, we know that people stay in the sector for decades. Actually, people are committed housing professionals for the most part, and it's a real source of pride for the sector. But we're not very good at bringing people in from school, from college, from university, from other sectors. It's almost quite a closed shop somewhere. And we need to be much, much better in identifying pathways for people to enter the sector so we can get kind of diversity of opinion and ideas so we provide better services. But I think that's particularly acute for the black community. Speaking to others who said that even some of the processes and portals and where we advertise, you know, if you want a job in local authority housing, you have to go to like myjobscotland.gov. Actually, quite an establishment, quite a maybe authoritative website. Actually, not necessarily the way that where most people would look for housing jobs. And what we talk about is a very values based, dynamic, people facing sector. How can we be better? Also, how do we have more people to actually go out and speak to tenants and speak to communities? Why are we not recruiting more thoughtfully from our tenant bases? We've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who are social housing tenants across Scotland. A lot of them have talent that could really help improve their services. You know, we have a statutory duty to consult with tenants and so many things in Scotland. Why are we not going out to speak to them? So I think the right now the recruitment challenges are perhaps, the positive thing could be that as well, forcing the sector to reimagine how we deal with recruitment, to look at places we haven't, that we've previously overlooked, almost expecting everybody to come to us. The world's changed. We need to be a more dynamic, engaging sector. CIH also needs to play its role in this as well. You know, we need to support the sector. We need to support professionals in actually attracting talent, attracting, making people see the really impactful career that someone can have. But you know, I would agree with the way Fash has sold it. It's a very challenging landscape for people coming into the sector, particularly for emerging black talent.
I'm interested, Lara, in the effect that the lack of representation of the black community and other ethnic minority communities have in the staff who run the housing business. What effect does that have on the tenants? There is some evidence that people from ethnic minorities get a worse service in various ways. Have you seen that?
First point I wanted to make is to Callum's first comment about the frontline level in social housing in Scotland is not that diverse. I have to say, I speak as someone who's had all my career in London, not in London, but in England, mostly in London. However, I did spend 9 months in West Pilton in Edinburgh, which wasn't very diverse, but I just thought I'd mention that because I'm speaking from someone whose career has been very English, and most of the big housing associations in England have very diverse frontline teams, so slightly different from the Scottish situation. Now, the question was, what's the impact on tenants? Was that the question?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so there's a two parts to that answer. In most English local authorities, you are more likely to have the latest social housing tenant to be someone from an ethnic minority. And that's because you have to jump through so many hoops of disadvantage and so many things have to be wrong in your life for you to qualify to be a social housing tenant. And as we know, unfortunately, people like me, Asian and Black people, are overrepresented when it comes to definitions of poverty or underachievement. So by definition, we are more likely to end up in social housing because it's so scarce, it only goes to the most needy. And on that basis, I then go on to say that when things go wrong, it's more, you've got a higher chance of it being a black person or a brown person who's affected by it, because we predominate in local authority allocations in the last 10 years or so. So I always go with a statistical approach first, because I worked in repairs and maintenance, and I see that a lot of the issues that we're talking about now are systematic issues. They're not necessarily about which tenant it is. It's about the organization, the procedures, the policies, systems that have gone wrong. But however, that is not to say that there are issues that affect ethnic minority tenants specifically. So I would say things, for example, like when I was running an organization, we decided that we were not going to do any repairs on Friday because we had a lot of tenants who were Jewish or Muslim. So we actually did not do any repairs on Friday. That just made life easy for all of us. You're not going to upset anyone, okay? And we did as much as we could to have female contractors or with certain tenants. And this is where the data comes in useful. If you know who your tenants are, certain tenants would make sure that the repairs, who were usually gentlemen, were accompanied by a female member of staff, just so that the women in that house would feel comfortable, because there's women at home alone and they're not allowed to spend time with men that they're not related to. So there's all those little kind of things that you can do if you have the right data. And then there's also the issue particularly that came up with the death of that young boy in Rochdale, which is some sort of old-fashioned colonial view about behaviours and practices that seem, I don't know, exotic or foreign. And I'm talking particularly about the use of bathrooms and showers. I mean, I heard this when I was a young housing officer and didn't have the guts to speak and say, actually, I think you're talking rubbish. Whether someone uses a shower or a bucket or a cup or a bath makes no difference to the amount of condensation that you're going to have in the property where the condensation is showing itself. But I did hear when I was a young housing officer, people saying, oh, well, these people are from Africa. They don't use a shower curtain properly. And that's why there's condensation. I'm like, well, actually, it's got nothing to do with that. So there are those issues. And I think there are individuals within the system that still look at foreigners, look at people like me and think, you know, we're old school, I don't know, foreign, we're uncivilized, don't know how to use things properly. If we don't speak the language, then we're deemed to be stupid. But there's lots of people that are new to the country that don't speak English for various reasons. Actually, there's lots of people that have been here for years that don't speak English for whatever reason. Yeah. So there is an impact in different ways. And part of the motivation for my campaign is I seriously believe that if boardrooms were diverse, and I mean diverse as in a good mixture, not just one black person in the boardroom or one disabled person, but the kind of mixture that you see generally. So three or four black people, one white person, two Asian people, equal male, female, the conversations would cover a whole range of issues. If you've got 10 white men in a room, their experiences are only going to go so far. And you reflect that as well. If you've got 10 people who look like me in a room, we're only going to discuss things so far. And that's why I wanted to have this campaign to say, if your boards are diverse, it will have a positive impact on the way services are delivered and the way things are reviewed at the boardroom, which will trickle down.
So Callum, just before you shoot off, I realise you've got time pressures here. What are CIH, what have they done so far? It was the 2020 commitment to improve EDI. What were its aims? What's been done so far?
So, I mean, part of it, you know, like any organisation looking at EDI care, and I think the first thing you have to do is get your own house in order. You want to provide leadership, but you need to look internally. So part of that is, staff training, staff processes, evaluating your recruitment and your kind of retention program, things like that, because actually that's fundamentally, it allows you as an organisation to get a better handle of what EDI looks like in the broadest possible sense. But then the other two things we're trying to do is show that leadership to the sector, as I mentioned. So it's around that EDI census, so we capture data so we can provide better services for our members. We've launched an EDI framework as well, which provides resources for members, both as corporate landlords and as individuals, to help support them and how they can improve EDI in their organisation. I think more fundamentally as well, actually, just as a kind of one of the leading housing organisations, it's about lobbying government for change. You know, in Scotland, we're in that kind of point where we're looking at legislating on human rights, you know, the right to adequate housing in Scotland. What an amazing thing to do, looking at real standards of housing, irrespective of tenure, you know, addressing some of the kind of the inequalities that we see regarding people's housing experience, whether they're black, disabled, whether they're kind of single parents, and things that we know are intrinsic in the housing system, you know. So that, and I think that's a real carrot for all of us. We should all be focusing on how we can improve that, but that's going to require the right legislation passing, the right level of regulation, enforcement, and then that magic word came money, because actually without the right money, we're not going to see the leadership we need, and that whether that's on improving housing outcomes because we've got the right professionals in place, improving housing outcomes because we've got the right quality stock in the right places, it will come down to money. It requires leadership and skills as well, but it needs money and drive from both the sector and needs that commitment from the government. We are playing our part. We're trying to play our part now. We've been missing from the table for a long time when it comes to EDI, but we are here. We hope the rest of the sector will be a big part of it as well, but it will take large campaign. I think in Scotland is probably just really the start of our kind of journey to actually improving EDI outcomes. But I think there's a lot going on in the sector, and I am hopeful that we're in a better place. And in a year's time or so, maybe we'll have me back and we can talk a little bit about actually what does the landscape look now. Am I kind of disappointed, or am I hopeful about the future?
Can I just jump in quickly and say that as someone who works and lives in England, I am so jealous of what you have, the environment that you have in Scotland, because the Scottish government is one step ahead, well, a couple of steps ahead of what's going on in England. You know, there's the thought that you might include human rights or something, treat people kindly, and have that in your legislation is not going to happen in England under this current government.
A simple question, though, kind of roughly related to what you've just said, Lara. Is there any justification in the claim that you often hear that Scotland is a more inclusive place than elsewhere? You know, do we deserve to give ourselves that reputation?
I think Fash might be in a better position to answer that. I mean, from the outside, if you're in England and you're looking at Scotland and Wales, we are jealous of the environment that you work in, because at least it's a conversation that has been had at government level in a sort of responsible, serious way. We cannot have that conversation in England, which is ironic to think we have an Asian prime minister and a very diverse looking party that runs the country. But we're talking detaining people because they're foreign and everybody's got to own their own home. That's the solution to the problem here.
Fash, what do you think?
I live in England for 3 years, and I've been here for almost 18 years now. So the experience I had there and what I'm getting here, I'm privileged to say Scotland is more inclusive for us. Very welcoming, and in terms of immigration, people can easily live, stay, and be supported to continue to live as human beings rather than be treated as anything that exists in England. So for me, for community I represent, Scotland is a place for anyone who wants to live a decent life, enjoy family life, and also tap into opportunity. It exists here.
I'm moving to Scotland, folks.
Just before we go then, Fash, there will hopefully be chief executives, board members at housing associations in Scotland listening to this, who are now thinking about hiring black talent.
The first thing I'll say is we should not see increasing representation of underrepresented community as a tick box exercises. Employing just Fash, Lara, or anyone of our color is not about getting the compliance right. It's about doing the right thing. Diversity doesn't mean inclusion. Inclusion is what we're looking for. Organizational culture needs to change. People need to be aware of culture of minority people within their workplace. And the members need to be trained. We need to be upskilled. If we do that, then we can have a organization that can achieve competitive advantage, create value for goods. So as an organization that represents data in Scotland, we are starting Career Accelerator to help black talent be connected to employers. What we want to do is not about just upskill. We want to support them on every stage. We have navigators that will hold their hands, but we are looking for housing providers who want to change the status quo, who want to tap into the untapped talent. I can promise them the level of talent we have here in Scotland, the country is wide open. Many black talents are here now, and they are ready to be supported, to be nurtured. And we will be starting that in the new year. So any chief executive, listen to me, contact me, and we'll be happy to work with you. Thank you.
Thanks, Fash. Thanks, Lara, and thanks to Callum. We'll wrap things up for this podcast and for the year. Thanks to my co-host, Jimmy Black. We'll be back in 2023 with more episodes of the Scottish Housing News podcast.